And welcome to the Courtney Turner Radio Hour. It is Monday, April 22nd, and it is an honor to spend this hour with you on WWCR Worldwide Radio. And if you want to see the visuals or listen to the replay, I will be posting this up on my podcast channel, so you can go to my website. That is CourtneyTurner.com. I spell it like Courtney. It is pronounced Courtney, but I spell it like Courtney. So that's CourtneyTurner. TURNER.com, and I will be posting this the next day, so you can go back and listen to it and follow along with some of the visuals that I've put up for you. And if you want to support my work, you will find lots of ways you can do that there as well. And I also want to remind you that we are doing a fundraiser. I'm doing a Gifts and Go to go and combat the WHO. And if you would like to support me in that journey to Geneva, it's a very expensive trip, and I cannot go without your support. So if you would like to see that happen, then please go over to my website and check out that Gives and Go. You'll find all the information there. I've done a couple of podcasts with the people who are behind the Geneva Project, so you can check that out as well. And if you just want to support the podcast, there's lots of ways you can do that as well on my website. And for those who want to go analog, I totally understand that in these times, and they are not interested in sending things digitally, you can send me snail mail and financial support through analog means through the mail. And you can do that through 6041 Rural Plains Circle, Suite 110, number 106, Franklin, Tennessee 37064. I'll say that one more time. It's Courtney Turner, 6041 Rural Plains Circle, Suite 110, number 106, Franklin, Tennessee 37064. We also have lots of ways, like a regular Venmo just for the podcast. You can buy me a coffee. You can send me a Venmo, Courtney-Turner at Venmo. And we also have some great products. So just a reminder, if there's Magic Dicol, I want my health back.com /course. We are also up until the end of April. It's a great opportunity to take advantage of. I love my Relax Sauna, Far Infrared Sauna, and you can get $150 off of your sauna up until the end of April. After that, it will still be a discount, but just not as much. So if you want to take advantage of the $100 discount, use the code QURTZ, that's C-O-U-R-T-Z, QURTZ, short for my name, and you can get your discount there. And we have lots of other great products like the Gold Backs, Defy the Grid, and use promo code QURTZ, Honey Colony, great high quality products there. And add me to your crowd. We've been diligently working to build a stack over there. So it's crowdrank.news/stack/Courtney Turner. So it's kind of like our own little Drudge Report, only better in my opinion. You can go over there, send me some love, build your own stacks, and we can build our own aggregated news source there. So that would be lots of fun. It'll be a lot more fun if you join me. And so we have the RNC store. Go check it out. That is, again, CourtneyTurner.com, CourtneyTurner.com. And we are very busy. We have lots of shows coming out. I've got lots of shows I'm doing this week. And if you've been following along, you will notice that I've been really tracking the UN and their, you know, philosophical kind of, we could call them religious spiritual, but now that you've seen the episodes, theosophical roots really is what they are. So I did an episode on the Lucius Trust, and if you'll remember, I talked a little bit about the history of the Lucius Trust and the origins and how it is the consultancy for the UN. They say that right on their website. I've had people argue with me about this. This isn't really like controvertible. It's on their website. They say that they're a consultancy for the UN. And this was the brainchild of Alice Bailey. And I also did recently an episode on Theosophy right here last week. You may remember that. And I also did a deeper dive longer on it with my dear friend Jamie Hanshaw. So we can check that out as well. And I just wanted to give you a little bit of an overview of why it is I'm diving into these topics and why I think that they're important and relevant. And it's really because it is the underpinnings of the UN, this spiritual, theosophical belief system and worldview. And it very much looks Luciferian. If you recall, the Lucius Trust was originally Lucifer Publishing, and they changed it a few years later. That was a little too on the nose. And so they changed the name to Lucius Trust. But it was Lucifer Publishing. It was created by Alice Bailey, who was a disciple of Madame Blavatsky, who founded the Theosophical Society in 1875. And she popularized the New Age movement, which is really what we're going to get to today. And just to, you know, preface, this is, I have an hour with you and I am honored to spend this time, but this is not going to get into all the nuances and nitty gritty of, you know, what I would argue is really thousands of years of a philosophical, in some ways religious, spiritual worldview. And I do say thousands of years, and I say that because I think this goes all the way back to the ancient mystery schools. I really believe that, and I think I can show you that, at least even in this short time we have today, I'm going to at least touch on that, so you will see. But, you know, so there are lots of, it's not like I think all theosophists agreed with each other. I understand that, you know, Bailey actually left the Theosophical School. I know that there was a lot of discrepancy over Annie Besant, believing that her adopted son Krishnamurti was going to be was going to be the Messiah, and he himself actually rejected that notion. You know, and of course Steiner left and made his own branch of but it still stems from very similar occult belief system. So we can see that this New Age, as they call it, is not new at all. If you recall, you can take your dollar bill, if you're in the United States, the American dollar bill. If you're not, you can go look up what the American dollar bill looks like, and you will see the pyramid with what some might say is the all-seeing eye, right? And you'll see a little slogan there. It says Nuvus Ordo Seclorum. What does that mean? It means the new order of the ages. One could say New World Order. Sound familiar? And interestingly enough, this was Alice Bailey had an ascendant master come to her when she was in church. And this ascendant master had told her that the mission of the Freemasons, which her husband, Foster Bailey, was a Freemason, that the mission of the Masons was to create a one-world religion, and that she was called to execute this mission. And it certainly looks that way when we look at Lucius Truss, which is her brainchild. And then, of course, all these subsidiaries, you know, the Arcane School, Triangle, the World Goodwill, the Festival Week with the World Servers. It does appear this way, right? So that was what she believed, and she is carrying out this mission that's part of the New World Order. Part of the New World Order, as we know, is this goal of creating a one-world centralized governing body, but it is also to create a one-world religion. And they do believe that they are mediums with psychic abilities. They believe they have all sorts of supernatural type of powers and abilities. These the theosophers, we'll call them. Goodwin in her book distinguishes between theosophy and theosophers. And so they believe that they have these ascended masters that, you know, they channel. And this is very relevant. I've been trying to sound the alarm about the UN 100, right? And what their goals are. And this is the centennial of the UN. So the UN was created in 1945. The centennial will be in 2045. So they're imagining the world in 2045. And they are building, they're already laying the groundwork to create this AI world society. I have done a couple of shows on it. If you want to check out, I did an episode with Maria Z. She has done some great work. I always want to give credit to people when they're doing fantastic work and they do the hard legwork of digging up some of this research. And she has done a 4-part series on, she calls it the UN 100 AI Apocalypse. We did an episode, if you want kind of the shorter breakdown of that, and we do a pretty deep dive, it wasn't super short, but we do a pretty deep dive into what is going on with the AI world society, what their goals are, and what they outline in their book, which is called Remaking the World, the Age of Global Enlightenment. And I do believe that, you know, by enlightenment, this is a new age signal to the initiates. This is a reference to the enlightened one, the illuminated one, who, you know, some might say that might be a Luciferian nod. But it is definitely, they believe that people are enlightened and that they're the ones who have consciously evolved. And we are going to get into a little bit of that as well, that, you know, there's people who are really advancing this idea right now, conscious evolution. And they do believe that it is technology that is going to help us consciously evolve. You probably heard people like Yuval Noah Harari and Klaus Schwab talk about human 1.0 versus human 2.0. And this is the idea, is a transhumanist idea. And, you know, there's many schools of transhumanism as well. So, you know, I'm not lumping them all together, but it is this idea of merging man with machines. And it is some of them are actually post-humanist. So they really truly believe that there will be a post-human world, which is just what it sounds like. And I thought there was only one handbook on this. There's apparently several. There are many thinkers in this school of thought. And the AI World Society looks like it is just the conduit to get us there. They talk about there being, AI citizens, that we will have digital twins in the AI society, world society. They talk about humans as being property, but I won't go on, drone on about that. The reason I bring this up is because I was talking about the Ascended Masters, right? Well, there's a very interesting document that is, it's right on, is the United Nations Centennial Initiative. They talk about, sorry, let me see if I found this document. It's at the UN.org, this document, where it's a message from the future. So they actually believe that they have channeled from the future that they need to have this AI World Society. It's UN 75. They really do have a long range vision, don't they? They're already building their plans for 2075, and that'll be this was back in 2020 that they talked about this. That will be the 75th anniversary of the founding of the United Nations, and of course, the centennial is the 2045 that they're building, that they want this AI world society for. Oh, I will tell you a little white pill. I was reading last night, and I don't think I have this, you know, the site directly to pull it up. But if you follow me on Twitter, you can find it. I did post it. But they are talking about, 2045, 2075. And they're saying that they're super behind on reaching the Agenda 2045 and Agenda 2030, that they're super behind. And so they're talking about all sorts of plans where they need to ramp things up and speed things along. So I just want to read a little bit of this to you because it is a little bit cuckoo, in my opinion. You may feel differently, but I do feel that this is, yes, they say they're way behind on Agenda 2030 and they're doing a summit of the future. So these future architects are going to, design our future. As we have seen in the past, they are very busy doing that. So if we go back to look at this UN.org unexpected message from the future, they say to you who have successfully received and decoded this message, greetings. We send this message back in time from 2045. Remember, this is when They believe that we will have this AI world society. It is in the hope that its recipients will recognize the profound importance of the period from 2020 to our present. We are at the cusp of the middle of the 21st century. The past 25 years have been critical to our survival as a society and as a species, for it was in 2020 that it was finally recognized that our only hope was to focus intensely and resolutely on the development of the new technologies to cope with the crisis of global warming and its side effects. Information processing, data sciences, machine learning, and more general artificial intelligence have all had a role to play in containing the consequences of the positive feedback loop of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, which are the life molecules, by the way. The reason they inject carbon dioxide into a greenhouse is to make the plants grow. Somehow this is deleterious. So because you are the carbon they want to reduce. That's just my personal editorial note. Greenhouse gases that have run rampant since the dawn of the 19th century, a major effort to deploy dense and widespread sensor systems on land, on sea, and space provided the raw data we needed to understand, model, analyze, and ultimately counter some of the worst side effects of climate change. And, you know, we talked a little bit last week about the theosophical, underpinnings. And this is really where this Gaia religion stems from. And we see that with this, the climate narratives that come out of things like the Limits of Growth, which was the Club of Rome document in 1972. And there's actually, before I will let you finish reading that, I will pull up this little quote from the Limits of Growth. They say that, it's not from Limits of Growth, sorry. So in the Limits of Growth, you know, that this is where they lay out this climate narrative, how the Earth is going to end and it's imminent. And so, of course, you know, we need to do something about it. And it's man who's causing all the problems. And then it was in 1992, there was a global revolution, the first global revolution document that was put out by the Club of Rome. And in this document, I've talked about this many times, they actually admit that they essentially created this narrative because they needed to get a common enemy in order to corral people behind this essentially big lie of the climate hoax narrative. And I'm going to read it to you because this is pretty clear. They say the common enemy of humanity is man. In searching for a new enemy to unite us, we came up with the idea that through scientific method and research and hard evidence. No, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, short water shortages, famine, and the likes would fit the bill. In their totality and their interaction, these phenomena do constitute a common threat which demands the solidarity of all people. But in designating them as the enemy, we fall into the trap about which we have already warned, namely mistaking symptoms for causes. All these dangers are caused by human intervention, and it is only through changed attitudes and behavior that they can be overcome. The real enemy, then, is humanity itself. This is why, again, you are the carbon they want to reduce. So this is very much a through line in all of this, right? We see this with the UN. This is the 17 sustainable goals. This is what drives them. They believe that they've channeled these these visions, and that is part of what is driving. So as I was telling you about this message from the 2045, they're saying how it is new technologies. This is why they believe that this transhuman vision, which is essentially what it is where we have to go and what is going to help us to evolve into evolve humanity. But it's not humanity 1.0. It's humanity 2.0 is what they keep saying. And I think we need to pay attention to that, because I think that they're really saying that humanity as we know it will cease to be. So this is a Malthusian view combined with a Gnostic worldview. And a transhuman agenda. So they say knowing what is possible, at the very end of that, they talk about how knowing what is possible is 90% of the way to overcoming skepticism and uncertainty. We are here in the future. We here in the future commend you of our past for your brave and determined initiative to reinvent the world for your future descendants. Please know that the effort has been worth it. And then they talk about joining the conversation for the UN 75 to learn more about the United Nations Charter history. And then they give you a bunch of links. And so maybe I'll do a show on the UN 75 and what some of those goals are. We can, dog ear that. So I had briefly mentioned, I think in the last episode, I was talking about the World Parliament of Religions and, because this is very essential that they have a one world religion. And many of the videos have talked about this, where these people say that it's because the religion helps shape culture. And so they need some sort of spiritual underpinnings in order to, steer people and steer the culture, steer behavior. And so we very much see that in effect with some of this, the new age cult is what I will call them. And you may have different perspective on that. That is fine. But they really do look like new age cults, and they're very tied to the UN agenda. And they're also very tied to these, techno-fascist corporatism. And we're going to see some of that in a little bit. But I wanted to bring up Robert Mueller. He, just a little refresher, I don't remember how much we went into detail on him in the last episode. And if you didn't hear it, we'll do a recap now. So he had a 40-year career at the United Nations, and then it led him to serve as the Assistant Secretary General under three Secretary Generals. He was responsible for setting up 11 different UN agencies, and he authored several books. These books were The Birth of Global Civilization, My Testament to the UN, New Genesis, Shaping Global Spirituality. And he was the chancellor and co-founder of the United Nations University of Peace in Costa Rica. And this is where he developed the World Core Curriculum. The World Core Curriculum may be better known to some of you as Common Core. That's essentially what Common Core is, or as Charlotte Iserbeet like to say, Communist Core. I think that was very aptly said. I would agree with her. I think it was definitely Communist Core. And he also established the Robert Mueller School in Arlington, Texas, and expanded to over 40 locations worldwide. He was dubbed as the Prophet of Hope and the Father of Global Education. So you can, check out, I've done several shows on the history of, our education system in the United States, how they exported the Prussian model of education. This is to breed compliance and obedience. And he talked about this, how it was very important to shape the children and the future generations. He explored faiths of Secretary General that he served under. This was including Christian mysticism of Dag Hammarskjöld and the Buddhist teachings of U Thant. And he considered U Thant, who was a Secretary General from 1961 to 1971, to be his spiritual mentor. And he was a student of Pierre, I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, I apologize, Teilhard de Chardin, who was a Jesuit scientist and a pioneer of the New Age thought. And we can very much see this through, if nothing else, through Common Core. Regarding his relationship with Thant, Mueller writes, "Here in the middle of my life was the master, the one who inspired me, someone I could imitate like a father. This has changed my life. Perhaps what we need most at this time are masters who give us good example. And like you, Thant, they ought to include people in the highest office with wide responsibilities. I would like the whole world to benefit from my experience. and hope in the future as I derive from my contact with Euthant. Euthant believes, he goes on to say, Euthant believes that peace on Earth could be achieved only through proper education of the younger generations, and that spirituality deserves the highest place in such education. This is why we are seeing things like social-emotional learning, rather than things like the Trivium. The Trivium, for those who are not familiar, was Plato's Academy, where you started out with grammar, rhetoric, logic, and then you went on to the Quadrivium, which included geometry. But now the focus is on things like social-emotional learning and this whole being of the child, and teaching things like critical race theory, although some people may believe that their schools or their states have banned it, they're still teaching this ideology just under a different name. Euthant believed that peace on Earth could be achieved only through proper education, and the younger generations and the spirituality deserve the highest place in such education. May the current concern for proper global education allow for spirituality, love, and compassion to be given generous room in all the world's education system. So while this sounds very nice, as I coined the last episode, the deception of love and light, and it is very deceptive. I think that this is what they mean by, the love and light is this, it's a false light. In my opinion, it's Luciferian would be the best way to explain it. He wrote an essay in which was circulated by UNESCO and which earned me the title of the father of global education. He's very proud of. I was educated badly in France. I've come to the conclusion that the only correct education that I have received in my life was from the United Nations. We should replace the world politics by planetics. We're going to see a lot more of this. And I personally think this is part of why they are ramping up these like UFO type narratives right now. It was even Reagan who said that what better way, and I'm paraphrasing, but what better way to get the planet Earth all to unite than to have the existential threat of an extraterrestrial threat? So I do think that that's part of why they're ramping this up right now, that a lot of these, alien UFO type disclosure narratives are circulating and really coming to the forefront in the media. And I think a lot of it is because they're trying to advance this global citizen type narrative and mindset, create this advancement towards a one world governing body, one world religion, and they're trying to do that by creating this unity. And as the Club of Rome told you in their first global revolution document, the best way to do that is to create a common enemy. So what would be the common enemy of the entire planet, of the world, would be some sort of extraterrestrial threat, right? That's just my opinion, but it's what it looks like to me. So he received, we should replace the world politics by planetics. We need planetary management, planetary caretakers. So again, this is saying that we need a centralized governing body for the entire world. Then I made this, and what it looks like, according to the UN, is it looks like this is going to be the AI World Society. And remember, in the AI World Society, there's no human governments. That's all been replaced by AI. This is why Klaus Schwab is doing, what would be called operational preparation of the environment, where he keeps telling you that, we don't really, you've all know Harari, I think, has mentioned it, but a lot of the World Economic Forum people who, by the way, the World Economic Forum and the UN like partnered in 2019, so they're fully in cahoots. But they had, they keep parroting this narrative that we don't need elections anymore because really AI can just take over. And I think this is operational preparation of the environment or predictive programming, whatever you want to call it. But I think that is what they're doing. They're conditioning us to accept that narrative and to go on board with it. We need a planetary caretaker, global sciences. We need a science of global psychology, a global sociology, a global anthropology. And then I made my proposal for World Core curriculum. So this is the roots of Common Core. That is what Common Core is all about. Mueller was also deeply impacted by Joao Kuhl. If you recall, that was the Ascended Master who helped Alice Bailey channel 24 books and who she saw as her spiritual mentor. Alice Bailey transmitted the teachings of Mahatma Maurya through Helena Blavatsky. And Mueller developed this world core curriculum based on their philosophy. So he's very much inspired by the theosophical teachings. And he made a direct connection to theosophy. So theosophy is the roots of, you know, what we're seeing in this whole takeover of education. And it is, this is part of why it's going in the direction it's going in. And it's also part of why it's so important. He kept saying we have to, you know, get a hold of the younger generations. So this is a quote from him and from the World Core Curriculum Manual. He says the underlying philosophy upon which the Robert Mueller School is based will be found in the teaching set forth in the books of Alice A. Bailey by the Tibetan teacher Joal Kul and the teachings of M. Maurya as given in the Anji Yoga series of books. I do want to give credit. I got a lot of the tips for some of this information from Jesse Smith at unmuted.org. He's done some fantastic work. And I have invited him. He is going to come on my podcast. I'm quite booked for several months. So I think we're looking at September, but I'm very much looking forward to that conversation. So if this is of interest to you, stay tuned for that. So in his article, I think this was in part two, he's done a series, but in part two, he talks about how in 1999, so it seems like, I don't know, I always make the joke that I didn't wake up till very recently, but that it took me forever to find the train station and I found the high-speed rail and I've been scrambling to try and catch up. I don't feel like that high-speed rail is ever fast enough, but it looks like all this stuff has been in the works for so long. You know, I talk about the Fabian socialist model of incrementalism, and we're seeing this. The UN is already planning 2075. And he was talking about the Aquarian Age. I had mentioned that on the last episode. We're already seeing this. And this is, of course, the model of this, why the tortoise is their mascot, right? The slow and steady wins the race. And so he talks about how in 1999, the occultist Steve and Barbara Rother of the Espavo Institute, and I recommend you look up the Espavo organization. They are quite busy. They began presenting live channeling sessions at the UN meetings. So this is working directly with the UN, and they're teaching channeling to the UN. And the UN staff heard messages from supposed angels, simply known as the group. They just refer to them as the group. And they called them the light workers at the United Nations. And if you remember back in my episode on the Lucius Trust, they talk about the light workers. And this is part of who goes to these festival weeks where we had the Festival of World Servers. So it's these light workers, and they just refer to them as the group. And it's an organization that's dedicated to spreading, quote unquote, light. And its name translates to thank you for taking your power and refers to the secret work of the global esoteric enlightenment. And I don't know, does this sound anything like the remaking the world, the age of global enlightenment? Sounds familiar to me. At least that sounds reminiscent. So their CEO, Steve Rother, wrote several books based on these channeled messages, which sounds very similar to what Alice Bailey did, right? She wrote these 24 books channeling Joal Kul. And April 26th in 2000, this was a quote, the following channel was presented to the Esoteric Society in the United Nations, Vienna, Austria. I think it's very interesting that it was done in Vienna. If any of you know the history of Vienna at the turn of the century, they have always been very involved in steering culture. There's a great book on it called Bread and Wine. I haven't read it since high school, but it was a great book I really enjoyed it. I had a very different perspective back then. So always interesting to go back and read, you know, things that you've read, your younger self read, and then read writings that you wrote based on those, and to see how your views may have changed as new information has come forth. Hopefully, you know, sometimes I'm more entrenched in my beliefs, but sometimes I'm like, wow, how much I didn't know. So that's always amusing to me. In this audience were delegates, department heads, office managers, secretaries, engineers, and scientists from the Atomic Energy Agency. Directly following this presentation we presented, we believe that is the first class on channeling ever presented at the United Nations facility. The VIC Esoteric Society meets in Vienna International Community, which is the international city housing all parts of the United Nations. These members are primarily employees of the United Nations and many of its subsidiary organizations, including IDO, the United Nations of Industrial Organization, the Atomic Energy Agency oversees all atomic activity globally, the UCBDO, and several others. The VIC Society hires presenters to speak at special meetings, and this was the second year that Barbara and Steve were asked to present information and do a live channel for the group. So let's see. I don't know if I want to read all of this to you, but they say that it was a spiritual family reunion with. Sorry, I just lost it. So they said. It was several others in April, May, that it lasted 5 weeks. And he said during this time that they presented 7 seminars, including 2 corporate ones. And then he said, if you told me 6 years ago that I would be teaching seminars, including 2 corporate ones, then that I would be teaching a class on channeling at the United Nations, I would have thought you were crazy. And he says that the information we bring about this night is the formation of groups that will bring back the greatest of governments that has ever visited the planet of free choice. I think this part is very relevant to remember, because when we get to, I don't know how much time we're going to have, but I'm going to talk a little bit about Barbara Max Hubbard. And she talks a lot about the planetary free choice. Those in this room and those of you who are reading this will act upon this information. Imagine a day where governments of the world talk as one. Imagine a day when the religions of the world find harmony. Imagine a day when the hearts of mankind balance through seeking their commonalities instead of searching for their differences. Well, I tell you, that day is at hand. We challenge you to create the organization necessary to make room for blending of all religions of the world. The group proclaimed, this was in 2001 UN conference, if we are to pull the veil aside for a brief moment, you might see the greatest secret of all. Sounds like the secret. There is a God, and you are it. Oh, dear ones, we tell you, you are not part of God. You are the whole of God. So I wanted to make sure I got you that quote, because it is very much the sentiment of all of these New Age gurus that I keep hearing. And definitely Barbara Max Hubbard has said very similar things. And this is a Gnostic theosophical view that through theurgy, we talked about this last week, through theurgy, which means the divine work, and theosophy translates to divine wisdom, that through theurgy, they can become God. And this is what we're seeing all over the place with all of these New Age gurus, that this is what they believe. And they believe that we can do this by merging with machines and through technology. So, let's talk about some of these New Age cults that we are seeing. Some of the people that there's so many of them, and I certainly can't go into all of them because we definitely don't have time, and I definitely don't know all of them. But I've just started to kind of dive into them. I think I mentioned maybe last week or I'm losing track, but the World Evolutionary Leaders is one. A lot of these people have been, you know, made popular through. You'll hear names like Deepak Chopra. Oprah has brought a bunch of them onto her show. I don't think I can pull it up fast enough, but she had done a whole thing on the, like, her series of miracles. And if you haven't checked that out, that was quite interesting as well. And it's really connected to a lot of these same people. So, yeah, Bruce Lipton is tied with these. So these names I'm just kind of throwing out right now. But we will see that. So I'm going to talk now. Some of them, you know, are recurring over and over again. And one of them is Mark Gaffney. And he seems to be involved in all of these organizations, many of them with Barbara Max Hubbard. And before I forget, I just want to mention my friend John Klysik has done two fantastic articles on Barbara Max Hubbard, drawing all of these connections to all of these organizations. And we are going to be doing a show on it. He's working on a third series. And we've talked a little bit about that, but I won't ruin it, you know, for those who are waiting to read that. I highly recommend you read it in full detail. Both articles are almost 40 pages, so there's a lot of information there. And he really lays out all of the connections and, you know, some direct quotes from all of these thinkers. And we've done several episodes before. He had the great fortune of knowing Charlotte Isherbeat. I can just imagine what a blessing that was. She seemed like a real trip. So, and she's such a gift to us now. She was the whistleblower for the BEST program. And yeah, so you can go check out. We've done several episodes. He's the author of School World Order. And he outlined, so Mark Gaffney, who's done a bunch of, a bunch of these conferences and also who is a the head of a bunch of these organizations, like the Conscious Evolution Organization. I'm going to blank on the names of a bunch of them. We'll get to them. But he has been involved in a bunch of them with her and some separate. And yes, we're going to get to it. And he has been accused of molesting underage girls on several accounts. And he's a former rabbi. It doesn't sound, I'm not sure what type of a rabbi. It sounds like he's very involved with Kabbalah. But he is starting this, and we're going to play you a little clip with Aubrey Marcus, who is definitely a new age type of thought leader. And let's listen to, he's trying to revive literally the mystery schools. So we talked a little about how that has influenced the theosophical underpinnings throughout history. And now Mark Gaffney says he's literally trying to revive them, but not just any mystery schools. He calls it the Eros Mystery School, which I do think is a nod to, Eros and civilization. It sounds very reminiscent. Some of you may remember that's Herbert Marcuse's book. It was a philosophical inquiry into Freud. And he was a German philosopher who proposes a non-repressive society. Of course, repressive tolerance really means that we accept everything from the left and we reject everything from the right. He literally says that in his repressive tolerance document. But he attempts to synthesize essentially Marx and Freud in his works. And he says that he wants to explore the potential of collective memory to be a source of disobedience and revolt and point the way towards an alternative future. That is what he was looking for in his work. And his title is, it alludes to Freud's Civilization and its Discontents. And in that, actually, there was like a political preference. So they, really believe in shaping the world. So let's play this video. It's a longer video. We'll play that.
Turn it over here to my brother, Mark, who has an invitation to join him in a mystery school, which actually is going to explore some of these concepts at far greater depth.
Yeah, thank you, Aubrey. We're doing a mystery school this summer. It's actually our 11th or 12th year, and it's a five-day intensive. It's in Belgium. It's the 21st to the 25th of August. But what a mystery school means is we enter into the field of Eros and we live in the field for 5 days. And so it's not just the Dharma we're going to do, meaning that the deep dives, it's the people you meet on the path. You create friendships, love, Eros, depth, that really is life-changing. The most stunningly beautiful moments of my own life personally have been at mystery school. And maybe last sentence, it's mystery schools that create culture. Mystery schools are the source. It doesn't happen in the doctoral department of this or that. Historically, in the Renaissance, in the Eleusinian mysteries, in the East and the West, it's mystery schools that form culture. So if you're willing to give yourself an insane gift of radical, mad love and joy and an unimaginable pleasure in response to the meta crisis, join us, mystery school. And to actually come to the mystery school, just go to the show notes. There's a link that says mystery school. You can sign up right there. Any questions, Krista, who's the director of the mystery school, her email's there. Find her today and join us. Thank you. I can't wait to see you.
Yeah, very much like the same thing I could say about our fit for service containers.
Fit for service, right?
You know, and I look forward to experiencing the mystery school one day, and I look forward to you experiencing what we're doing at fit for service.
No, fit for service and mystery school, they want to find each other.
Yeah, no doubt.
They do. Yeah.
So, yeah, see, there you have it, the Eros Mystery School. And we're going to learn a little bit more about what Eros Mystery School actually is. He's going to explain that. I'll play the next clip. But it essentially sounds like they're creating an occult, initiated mystery school. But yes, we'll listen.
I am so delighted to be here in this moment in history, in this moment, which is a time between stories and a time between worlds, to welcome you to mystery school. Now, mystery school is not a new technology. Mystery school harks back, is sourced in ancient civilizations and in both traditional societies and the modern society that created all that emerged from the Renaissance, the forces that actually created the Renaissance itself. All of these were formed by mystery schools. It wasn't public universities, which barely existed. It wasn't governments with all of their politics and conflicts. Rather, it was mystery schools. The mystery school is a place where we come together to experience in our heart, in our mind, and in the pulsing movements of the body, in the body's urgency and in the body's quivering tenderness, in the mind's urgency, and in the quivering tenderness of the mind, if you will, in the heart's urgency and the quivering tenderness of the heart, we come together in the mystery school to experience the future. What a mystery school does is access a memory of the future, heart, body, and mind. In the mystery school, your future self calls to you. In the mystery school, the future self of culture, of society, of our global civilization calls to us. And we come to mystery school always because we understand that we need to be more. We want to love more. We want to feel more. We want to know more. We want to be more intimate and more creative and more alive and more kind and more ecstatically urgent and more deep and profound. We come together because there's none of us who haven't experienced crisis, and our crisis is a birth.
Our crisis in our personal lives is the evolutionary driver that has the possibility to potentiate our new potential, to birth our new possibility.
So this birth crisis, I think that we're probably not going to do this. I'm going to do this in the next episode, but just to give you a little foreshadowing, there is this, this is the accusation that Mark Gaffney had molested a 13-year-old girl in 1980. There were two other women who came out and spoke and said that he had, molested them when they were teenagers. There's a whole Dr. Phil episode, so you can go and watch that yourself and be the judge there. But I want to bring up this graphic that Barbara Marks Hubbard, it is from the center. What is it? From the evolutionary. I'm not going to be able to read it, but so this is her cosmoerotic humanism. So a wheel of co-creation, and you see it right above. It says our crisis is a birth. And I've talked quite a bit about the Hegelian dialectic, and the image for the dialectic is you see this here, this spiral. And what is this spiral? It's really, because this is a Gnostic view, right? They believe, remember that Hegel believed that the state equals God. And this is, everything is marching towards the omega point, these dialectical poles that go left, right, advanced, they ascend, right? And that's towards the omega point. And the omega point, he believed that the state equaled God. And he actually believed that we could have absolutely no freedom without complete subservience to the state. And this is very much what this looks like. It looks like, and again, this is this Gnostic view that is through this esoteric wisdom that we can become gods. And if you really look at it, it kind of looks like Hegel's dialectical spiral is Jacob's ladder, that they believe that through this theurgy that they can become gods. And that is essentially what this is showing right here. So we're going to talk more about Barbara Max Hubbard in the next episode, and we will talk more about her visions and some of the stuff that she, I'm going to play some clips of her with the, at the Singularity University. Some of you may remember Ray Kurzweil. The singularity is near, and it looks like that singularity is the AI world society. But in the meantime, to wrap this up before I close out, I do want to address what he was talking about with the Eros Mystery School. He tries to make the distinction that, Eros means sex, and he tries to say that, it's not just sex and that we're misinterpreting it. He says that, as you probably know, most people assume that Eros is merely a synonym for sex. It is not. The fact that we so often confuse Eros with sex merely reminds us of how distant we are from our true erotic engagement. Erotic fulfillment is reached when you expand the realm of Eros beyond the sexual embrace to embrace all of your existence. Indeed, the root of the Sanskrit word tantra, tan, means expansion. True tantric energy expands into all realms of life. This expansion is the goal of Kabbalistic tantra. Sexual models, the erotic, this, that is to say, within the sexual itself, are the most important hints of Eros. From the nature of the sexual, we learn what it means to live erotically. Sexual models, the erotic, but it does not exhaust the erotic. Sex by itself can never fulfill, and you can see this on the website of the Eros Mystery School. When you just scroll down, this is kind of the first thing that pops up. Sex by itself can never fulfill our erotic needs. But when sex tries to do what is beyond its power to accomplish, sexuality implodes on itself. We begin to find fulfillment only in boundary-breaking sexuality, which then becomes the only way we can experience Eros. So I won't go on. You can read it yourself, but I just wanted to point that out because, this is talking about breaking down the boundaries. And this is what all of the theosophical teachings seem to hearken to, is this dissolution of boundaries. This is why we have to have dissolution of boundaries when it comes to male-female, to nation states, to religion. It's everywhere you turn. This is part of why they are pushing the psychedelics. They want to have complete dissolution of boundaries because they believe that all is one. And this is what they are trying to convince us. So yes, I will. Yeah, stay tuned because we have a lot more to unpack with all of this. And I do want to go into some of the different organizations that Barbara Max Hubbard and Mark Gaffney are involved in. And it's this idea of, yes, this conscious evolution. And it really is a transhumanist idea that we are going to use technology in order to consciously evolve essentially into all one, and that we can co-create. And we're co-creating the existence of the Earth. Marianne Williamson is another one who is very much involved in all of this, this conscious evolution, and that they do believe that they are the world evolutionary leaders. So, yeah, so we'll talk more about that next week, and hopefully you'll join us for that. That should be a fun ride. And in the meantime, you can check out all of my work. You can listen to this again at CourtneyTurner.com. That, again, is Courtney, like spelled like Courtenay. So that's CourtneyTurner.com. And you can find all of my podcasts there, and you can find all the great ways that you can support the podcast. You can also buy me a coffee or a few coffees since I am very tired. So, well, I really appreciate there has been great support, for the podcast as well as for the WHO. So for my trip to the WHO. So I really appreciate those of you who have supported. And I also, if you could just share and like and subscribe to the podcast, that helps me out tremendously. So, it helps get the message out as well, and this information, and it does help me. So if you want to, again, I'm just going to send the reminder for analog messaging. That is Courtney Turner. You can send mail to 6041 Rural Plains Circle, Suite 110, number 106, Franklin, Tennessee, 37064. And you can send all of your analog messages and support over there. And don't forget the Relaxana till the end of the month. That's till the end of April. You can get $150 off. That is a great discount. Do take advantage of that one. And so for next week, we're going to talk more about Barbara Max Hubbard. We're going to talk about her connections to some things we've talked about before, like the Esalen Institute, a lot of the human potential movement. This is all tied in. It's really interesting to me how whenever I start diving into research that is relatively new to me, I always think that, probably foolishly, that somehow it's going to be separate. And a lot of the time, sometimes things are, but a lot of times these things are all connected. The same funding entities seem to be involved. The Rockefellers are very much involved in funding a lot of this with, the World Religion of Parliaments, the Parliament of World Religion, the Human Potential Movement, the Technocratic Movement, and some of these conscious evolutionary movements as well. They are very much involved. So again, it's CourtneyTurner.com, CourtneyTurner.com. And thank you all so much for watching and listening.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.